Today is Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024, and you're listening to the Ask a Christian podcast. I'm your host, Nate. All right. What's the difference between Anabaptists and Baptists? Let's talk about that a while. Then we get into Richard Dawkins says, hey, Christianity isn't so bad after all, after spending, you know, years and years trying to destroy the idea of God. Anyway, there are things worse. We'll talk about that in a minute. So what do we talk about? Some more random topics. We do some catching up, pretty good discussion. And then, as usual, we have to devolve into something. Why not presuppositional apologetics to end the hour? So, yes, I'm just not a fan. I don't care how many times we talk about it. Two new people who I know them, but I haven't heard them talk about presuppositional apologetics, but apparently that's the angle they try to hit today. And not only does it instantly infuriate Michael, who's usually more mild-mannered, and some will say, well, the dog that yelps is the one that got hit, like a pack of dogs, someone throws a rock into a pack of dogs, the one that yelps the loudest is the one that got hit. That's the saying. Anyway, but still, I mean, I get it. Like, on one hand, it's like, oh, well, you know, they got hit, they got burned, that's why they're so angry. Or because it's so infuriating, because it's like, well, you'll hear. And, you know, I gotta say, man, I agree with them. Every time I hear it, if you're a Christian, it's like, great, you're just reporting the Christian news. Of course I believe there's a God. Of course I believe the Bible. No problem. We're all friends. But if you're not a Christian who doesn't believe there's a God and doesn't believe there's a Bible, that's two really big asks. I mean, if you commit to that, just go ahead and be like, hey, just repent and believe Jesus. That's it. I don't know, man. I don't know. Here you go. So here's some presuppositional apologetics. The good news is we have a good, great discussion before that. And, you know, if you want to get your popcorn and sunglasses on or 3D glasses on to listen to the precept stuff, I guess. But I'd rather just throw myself into my lake. But all right, take care. Share these links. Have a good day. See ya.
Oh, side note real fast. Lou, by the way, no, like we were saying yesterday, Baptists got their name just because they believe baptism is for full immersion, not a sprinkling. That's the reason. I'm looking at the difference between like Anabaptist and Baptist, and at a glance, doesn't seem like much. Chris, do you call Anabaptists, did Anabaptists basically turn into modern day Baptists, or either they're like some weird branch of Amish?
Oh boy, that's like super complicated. But
okay. Wait, hang on. So are all Anabaptist heretics? Are some Anabaptist heretics? Are no Anabaptist heretics?
Some Anabaptists are heretics.
Okay, what's the difference of heresy, not heresy? So I guess where it branches from heretic, not, you would say that not heretic go on the side that eventually turns into Baptist?
Correct.
Okay, so what's the heretic side? Where does it?
The heretic
side. So Anabaptists
side,
are non-heretics, and now this makes a branch of heresy.
So the heretic side were literal terrorists that murdered people and took over villages and raped entire villages and, you know, like, chopped people up into pieces and threw them over city walls and those were the bad guys.
Did they have a doctrine that says no, don't be violent? And they're just like, okay, it says don't be violent, so let's murder people. And they took their own doctrine out, or what?
No, they were
a heresy.
They were 16th century, and I hate to say this, but they were 16th century charismatics that believed that God
was... The charismatic movement didn't invent until the 1900s.
Well, what we would call charismatics. But, like, you know, they... Right, I mean, if you want to go back to the... They were Unitarian. They were also Unitarian. They were violently Unitarian. So if you read about the Siege of Munster, this is fascinating.
That's
so anyway,
Anabaptist? I thought it was
that's
Calvinist
Anabaptist.
The other day.
No. Calvinists didn't do the Siege of Munster. The Calvinists stopped the Siege of Munster.
Okay,
well, like,
we're
they weren't Calvinists then, because
we're
Calvinists
getting real far away. Okay, yeah. So where did Anabaptists get invented? Like in the 1600s? Was that part of the Reformation, and they just went farther than everyone else did?
No, they weren't part of the Reformation. It's just that they
around that time.
So it was around the same time. Yes. So the problem is that what's happening is there's a balkanization of political power in Europe. That means that there's like small city states forming. The feudal powers are, of course, falling apart. The national powers can't project their power. The church The Catholic Church is strong in France and a couple other places, but not as strong in places like Switzerland and Germany. Okay, and so they don't have armies with which to enforce their will in those countries where, they, as in France, they do. And so, and again, this is all, it gets very complex, but essentially, and I don't want to, I don't want to say something and then somebody come back and be like, well, that wasn't true. Because
like, can I just ask a series of questions that
yeah.
would probably make
okay,
this
maybe that'd
like
be easier than me
less.
Just
okay.
giving you like, yeah, okay.
Okay, I do appreciate the history lesson, but I have another topic that is juicy too. Okay, so Anabaptists. Basically, the first time anyone said the word Anabaptist, which would probably be in like Dutch or something, you'd be like, Ancho Bob Cha or whatever. So anyways, whenever the first idea of Anabaptist came up was around the 1600s, and whenever the first person to come up with Anabaptist doctrine, you would say that was not heretical or heretical. The very inception of Anabaptist doctrine, like when it very first was recognized, did they have all their ducks in a row? Like they believe in the Trinity, they're not Unitarians, like it's all good, it's all biblical.
No, because it all happens at the same time.
Okay, so at the very time,
so I
like,
think what he's saying
hey,
is that there was a cluster.
Hang on, I'm just trying to get through this. Sorry, I'm like Roy right now. I just want to ask questions. Okay, so someone's like, hey. Anabaptist, and like two people were like yes, and one is what Chris would call non-heretic and the other one is like Unitarian, and at that very same moment there is correct Anabaptist and not correct Anabaptist, correct?
I mean yes, within years okay. of each other, within okay. a couple dozen okay. years of each other, yes.
Okay, and then so the good Anabaptist, the non-heretical one, went on down through the ages and kind of turned into what we would call Baptist now, and all of them are good and fine. The yes. other branch, from the very first time it was invented, they are non-Trinitarians?
They are non-Trinitarians. They
and then
are
whatever,
violent.
What other heresy follows? Like, not violence. I mean, unless their doctrine says be violent, which I doubt. But I mean, they're, so like, if they're Unitarians, that's one big thing. What other doctrinal thing? Like,
Well, again, like they rejected the word of God. The Anabaptists were mystics, and so those Anabaptists were mystics, and so they believed like so. For instance, at the Rape of Munster, the one guy, I can't remember the dude's name off the top of my head. He declared himself the new King David, and then began taking wives and concubines from the 15-year-old daughters and slightly above of the city. And then he would rape them and then he would behead them because God told him to.
Okay. So I don't need to ask about finer points. Like, hey, what do they think about the hypostatic union?
So
just that's
right.
so far in the
they're just, they're just gross, disgusting terrorists. And the fact that
got
they got
one,
chopped into fish yes, bait was a good thing.
I got one. Yeah, I got like 1 minute, 1 minute.
Yeah.
So to clarify your question, what you're asking him is, did they start out as heretics?
That group did, yes.
Apparently, according to Chris, both groups started this within a very short amount of time. One branch was not heretics, and the other was wildly heretics.
I'll rephrase the question. Anabaptists started as heretics.
No.
No.
You see how the answer changes? Okay.
No,
so
but if you said
start.
That... No, okay,
so let me clarify what Chris, I think her, I heard her, Chris heard, I mean, what I think Chris said, I think what he said was that there was a cluster of Anabaptists and they were different. They were heretics among the non-heretics. Is that
no.
what you used to kind of
no.
trying to say?
No.
All right. I'm just a pilgrim over here. I'm going to go back to the audience. I
got
to go to
work. Okay. I got one more. Okay. I got to wait here. Okay. Let me try. Hey, guys. The Catholic Church is out of control. It needs reformed. Oh, hey, there's this guy Luther. And hey, he did some stuff. And hey, this guy Calvin and, you know, Jacob Arminius. No matter how much someone to say Jacob, it's Jacob Arminius is what we're going to call him. You know, these guys reformed some stuff. But hey, I don't think they went far enough. But I don't have a clue what else needs to be done. Hey, Chris. Hey, Lou. Do you guys have any ideas? And they're like, yes. And they start having ideas. And they're like, what are we going to call ourselves? And Chris is like, let's call ourselves Anabaptist. And Lou's like, yeah, that's a great idea. And they're like, okay, what's our doctrine? And Lou's like, there's a Trinity. And Chris is like, wait, no. it's Unitarian. And at that moment, both of them call themselves Anabaptists, but Chris and Lou never speak to each other again. They go different directions. Lou, with a Trinitarian, non-violent view of Anabaptists, goes and, you know, recruits people and is like, hey, we're Anabaptists. And Chris goes the other direction and recruits a bunch of people that are Unitarians, like Bob, and says, hey, we're Anabaptists. Is that fair, Chris?
No.
Well, oh, come on. All right, I give up. This sucks.
So, let me just... Okay, the groups never knew each other. And the term Anabaptist was put on them by Christians. They didn't call themselves Anabaptists. None of them did, because it's an insult. Anabaptist means rebaptizing. So, like...
Because sprinkle when they say you need full immersion.
Well, no, it's that you need to be baptized as an adult believer who becomes redeemed. They reject the idea of infant baptism from the Roman Catholic Church.
And also full immersion. Throw us a bone.
I mean, sure. And some of them did full immersion. Some of them didn't. I mean, but
okay, let's start over. You just tell us the whole history. Just start from the beginning.
Okay. So there was, at the dawn of the Protestant Reformation, it's not just that Luther is doing the Protestant Reformation and then what Roman Catholics will tell you is Luther took all the shackles off and, you know, and then you got the blossoming of 40,000, you know, or 80,000, whatever number they're using, denominations, you know, and it's all Martin Luther's fault. Meh. And what the reality of it is that because of the lack of political power in a lot of places in Europe, you started having groups popping up that had always popped up. There was always the Waldensians and the Hussites, and the Roman Catholic Church attempted to, in the Cluniacs, they attempted to wipe those people out and did a pretty effective job. They killed a couple of million Hussites and Waldensians between 1320 and 1550. So, like, I mean... they did a pretty effective job, but they stopped being effective because people were tired of the slaughter. They were tired of the Catholic Church. The rulers were like, you know, basically like there was all kinds of division within the Catholic Church, and it was a mess. And so you had groups like the group that I'm talking about that were like the Unitard terrorists that were begging the Muslims to invade Europe and cleanse it of all Christians forcibly. Right? Like, that is who, you know, you've heard of Servetus?
Yes. I don't know anything about him. I've heard the name.
Right. So people will try to impugn Calvin and be like, yeah, but Calvin executed Servetus, which is not remotely true. But Servetus was one of these, like, terrorists. He was wanted in every country in Europe as Osama bin Laden, basically.
I remember you talking about that before, yes.
Yes. So he was Osama bin Laden of the 16th century. Because he was trying to get the caliphate to come and cleanse Europe of Christians, like genocide. Like, that was his thing. And you could read it in his writings. Like, he's not hiding the ball. Like, people are so dumb. Anyway, that group of Unitarian, what we call Anabaptists, they would convert somebody to their new religion of jihad, and then they would baptize them into their new religion. So they became what was known as Anabaptists. Then you had a whole other group of people later on in the Reformation, like about 20 years later, in a completely different place that had nothing to do with those Unitards, that were saying like, hey, you know, this infant baptism thing, I'm just not buying it. Like, we're going to baptize believers, like they do in the New Testament. And then they got painted with the moniker of Anabaptist. But they never had any relation to one another. They never knew each other. It's just that all of the people that were running the Reformation at the time were deeply pissed off that there were people that were rebaptizing people. And so they just called everybody Anabaptists. And it was incredibly convenient that you had literal terrorist rapists as one group that you could call Anabaptists, so that you can then paint people like Pastor Mark as the same as them. Make sense? It's a political move. So they came up with the moniker of Anabaptist to basically paint their theological rivals with the moniker of like rapist terrorist, because you gotta understand, like, people were terrified of Anabaptists after Munster. They were terrified. Because they killed thousands of people in a town.
They took control of the town and just killed thousands of people and raped all the women and, you know, beheaded young girls in the public square for entertainment. Like, I mean, yeah.
So kind of like what Gas is doing in chat over there. I was like, God's people were commanded to rape and destroy the Canaanites. So Chris is a heretic. Chris and Nate even said they would be on the front lines raping the Canaanites. So if that's what makes you a heretic, you're both heretics. People like yeah. that, when we're like, no, that's completely stupid. No one said that and no one did that. If anyone in the Israelite camp did that, they would be executed. Yeah, they would be guilty of sin and crime. It is expressly forbidden. So, you know, I mean, if you want to peddle your fan fiction somewhere else, you know, maybe, I don't know, become one of the Anabaptists Chris was talking about.
Right. And the problem is that, and again, it kind of sucks, but when you read the Reformers, they're going to lump everybody together. So they're going to lump, like, mild-mannered Pastor Mark in with a wild-eyed Osama bin Laden Islamic terrorist because they disagree about baptism. I'm not joking.
Yeah. Well, Lou and I were talking the other day. We're like, I was trying to think, I'm like, look, because we were talking about like crazy ideas people have, right? Like people that didn't go far enough in the Reformation or even Catholics, right? With all their icons and Mary stuff. And it's like, look, what is just the one denomination or lack thereof that's just like the closest to just mild-mannered biblical interpretation without adding stuff? I'm like, I think that would just be like your very basic run-of-the-mill Baptist. Like, can you think of a more tame, just biblically according, like not adding a bunch of extra rules or stuff to it?
Yeah, just, like a 1689 Baptist, like a Tom Askell or like a Reformed Baptist. Yeah.
How would that be different than like Mark today?
Well, I mean, they're more biblical. They're Reformed. They don't have a nonsense epistemology. I mean, you know, stuff like that.
Sounds like you're adding stuff to it.
Well, no, I mean, it's just, I mean, again, because I am Reformed, I'm going to obviously come down on the
side. But you guys
Reformed.
Are, it's like some of the stuff you say though, like as Reformed, it's like, wait, these guys are Reformed. Does that not mean what they think it means? Like, man, for being Reformed, some of the stuff you do, it like brushes like right against like Catholic shoulders. I'm like, if you were Reformed, like you'd like put that arm out and be like a little more arm's length than you were. Like, I don't think you Reformed far enough.
Well, in some instances, that's correct. So like, so for instance, like eschatology, the Reformers just copied and pasted the Catholic eschatology at the time. Like, they just didn't care because like they had bigger fish to fry.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they were just like, whatevs, I'm just going to copy and paste this eschatology here. So really eschatology just didn't even get explored for hundreds of years, you know, and they just were like, nah, here is, this is it. We just, you know, oh yeah, Augustine with amillennialism. Let's copy and paste that, you know? And that's fine. I mean, Augustine's eschatology is within Orthodoxy. I'm just a historic premillennial, like most of the early church before Augustine. You know, that's an example of something that's like, you know, but then, you know, American church history is complex too, because you've got like Darbyism and a lot of the things that people believe now about eschatology come from a bunch of nonsense called Darbyism that was also put out by Schofield. And you'll hear people talk like very like meanly about dispensationalists. And when they find out that I'm a dispensationalist, they think that I'm some kind of wild. Again, they're going to lump me in with a Darbyite or with like a wild eyed terrorist rapist, Osama bin Laden. You know,
that's who I most recently just heard give crap about Darby and Schofield?
Who's that?
Jay Dyer.
Yeah. Yeah, Jay Dyer. Yeah, because he's got this whole thing. And he's not wrong. Like, that's the frustrating thing about Jay Dyer is that he is a raging heretic, but then he does say things that are smart sometimes.
Wait, why raging? Like heretic would just be like orthodox. But what makes it raging?
Because he rages against salvation by faith alone. He rages against the scripture. He rages against the God of the Bible. You know, his God is a completely different God. He's a more.
Well, yeah, I was just trying to quantify raging versus just run of the mill heretic.
I mean, like, run of the mill heretic could be somebody who just goes to a dumb church and is like a Mormon. They're just a regular heretic. A raging heretic is somebody who spends hours on the internet every day arguing with Christians.
All right, that makes sense. Yeah, I was supposed to I appreciate his political commentary, and that's what I was watching, but then he like kind of took a dive because, you know, he and everyone else was talking about the April 8th thing. Dude, it is crazy, right? Like, I can't go anywhere without hearing about this April 8th thing. And it's like, the funny thing is, like, none of it is coming from, I mean, I'm sure they're out there, but I never hear any of it from, like, you know, religious fanatics. They're like, it's a sign from God, the world is going to end. Like, you would expect that's what you hear, but it's not. It's like, everyone is like, yeah, it's just another eclipse. It's not a big deal. But then they're like, why is the secular world, like, freaking out about it? Like, apparently, like, New York's locking down all their prisons, like, NASA's shooting rockets at the moon. Like, it's just like, what? Like, China's issuing warnings to their citizens in America about it. And it's like, what, 30-something million people will be in the line of sight of the eclipse, which means, like, 7-something billion won't be affected at all. But it's like all the governments and stuff, they're, like, putting out warnings and urgent letters and stuff. It's like, okay, even, like, the religious leaders who you would think would be, like, kind of fanatics about it, they're like, no, it's just a solar eclipse. It's not a big deal. But it's a secular government that everyone's like, why are they freaking out? Like, eclipses happen all the time, even solar eclipses. Like, it may not have been this pattern, but it happens pretty regularly in other parts of the world. So there's no big deal. Why are they making a big deal? Anyway, so he was giving his take on that and somehow got into, like, eschatology and the Schofield thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, yeah. But, I mean, like, oh, April 8th, James White is debating Jimmy Akin on Sola Scriptura. Oh, that should be pretty good.
Unless the world ends.
Right, yeah, unless the world ends with the silly solar eclipse.
Are they also supposed to sacrifice the red heifer on the 8th? Is that a thing, or is that a different date? I saw the platform they have built for it.
Probably a thing, but, like, I was telling somebody else, like, one of the younger kids was like, you know, this ashes of a red heifer thing is a big deal. And I'm like, I don't think you understand. I've been a Christian for, like, 35 years. I've seen stories about the ashes of the red heifer and, like, shipping these red heifers to Israel literally every 5 years for the last 35 years. So this is, like, my seventh go-around of this crap. Of this stupid nonsense, and it's just not true, and it's stupid, and everyone should just ignore it.
Well, I mean, I don't know about not true in a religious sense, but I mean, the big deal will be, like, you know, apparently, like, lots of Muslims are threatening to, like, you know, do jihad stuff. So, I mean, even though if there's not religious significance to it, which I'm just reserving judgment, but if there's not, I mean, there could be very real consequences if, you know, crazy people do crazy things. So, like, if they actually sacrifice it, right, they believe that that's the precursor to doing the temple. So, like, if Muslims take them at their word and they're like, well, hey, if we actually sacrifice this thing, that's something that hadn't happened in your lifetime, right? They've never sacrificed it. So if they go through with it and do it,
yes, and then they have. Over the last 7 years, they've done it 7 times.
Oh, well, okay. Well, then why haven't they tried to take back the temple? Like, did they get it wrong? Or, like, why are they? Okay, yeah, anyway.
This is the seventh time they've been wrong and stupid. This is why I paid no attention.
But wait, what's there to be wrong about? Like, like, are they looking for a sign? Like, they sacrifice it and then, like, you know, a sign happens?
An earthquake will happen, destroy the Dome of the Rock, and then they're free to build the temple and the Temple Mount. Like, they have all kinds of really stupid, crazy
Okay, ideas. I thought it was like they basically make it a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, they sacrifice the thing and then they're like, all right, well, it's sacrificed. Now all we have to do is, you know, go take over the Dome of the Rock.
Yeah.
I thought it was like a self-fulfilling thing. No,
so no,
like
they think they're going to force God into triggering something. This is
so,
why.
Okay, so they're waiting. Specifically, it's tied to a supernatural sign, not them overthrowing the dome.
Correct.
Oh, okay. But still, I mean, if they sacrifice it, and then I guess that starts a lot of political upheaval, even if it's not a religious thing, I mean, it's just going to add fuel to the current Middle East issues.
Nah, I don't think any of that's going to happen. I think it's all dumb, and I think that just ignoring it will go away.
Like, you don't think there's anything that could cause the Gaza issue to be further exacerbated?
No. I mean, it's already...
Really?
Like, what else are they going to do? Invade it harder? Like, I mean, like, what? Like, I mean, it's just dumb. The whole thing is just dumb. The Israeli authorities never even let these guys get off the boat. They just turn them back, and they're like, you crazy Americans, go home, you retards. And that's exactly what's going to happen. Like, nothing's going to happen. It's just, this is the same thing that they've been doing. Pat Robertson in the 1980s did a million stories in the 700 Club about the stupid red heifer.
Wait, I know
you can go
that.
Look it up.
I know that. I remember seeing it. But are you saying this is dumb Americans doing this who are waiting for an earthquake? Or, like, the actual, like, or the ultra-Orthodox Jews who are wanting this done? they also are waiting for an earthquake?
Yeah, this is like people like Courtney, dude.
No. Okay, so no Jew ever wants to sacrifice a red heifer to get back the temple.
No, there are. I'm sure there's whack jobs out there. I'm not saying there's not whack jobs.
Okay, so the ones who are building the platform, it's a bunch of like blonde-haired, blue-eyed, white dudes from America who are doing this. It's not like a Jewish group of people.
It's a combination of both. The money is coming from a bunch of white people in America that are trying to force the second coming. The people who are doing it are ultra-Orthodox weirdos.
That's what I said.
That the Jewish authorities are never going to let do any of this stuff.
Well, apparently there's about to be like a, you know, there could be like a, another, and as far as like, it can't be exacerbated anymore. I mean, there's always nukes, right? So at some point, I mean, if it gets bad enough, someone's going to let one slip and then, you know, there you go. So, I mean, it can always get worse.
Wait a minute. But, I mean, Israel's the only one who has nukes in the region. No one else does. This is why.
Iran's probably got something.
Well, this is why that, like, the reason that the Iran nuclear thing is such a big deal is if Iran does get nukes, then that destabilizes the region.
Well, so, yeah, but Iran just blew up Iran's embassy in Syria, and they're like Russia's closest ally. So, or one of Russia's close allies, mm-hmm. and they have nukes. So I'm just saying, like, I mean, we're still probably a long way
sure,
from that.
Any crazy thing can happen, sure.
Yeah, and in parliament, right, or the Knesset or whatever it is, like, it's got like a bunch of secular people, but there's also, what, like the equivalent of like the America First or the Tea Party, like the ultra Orthodox in there who are like about to throw a wrench in like their parliament or whatever it is because they're wanting that group, I forget what it's called, it starts with a K, I think, or an H, but they're wanting basically full-time Torah students to be exempt from military service. And the secular people are like, nope, they got to be in military service. So they're about to like blow up parliament over that and stuff. So, I mean, you know, things can always get worse. Anyways, I got another topic. Who wants another topic? I want another topic.
Yeah. Oh, anyway. I mean, I don't know why we got on the... Why did we talk about Anabaptists?
Because Lou and I were talking yesterday, and we're like, what's the difference? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, Chris will know.
Yeah. Well, it's a real contentious thing in church history, too, because, again, like, good reformers like Calvin would paint, like, other... you know, just mild-mannered Baptists is like terrorists. So, like, no one is perfect. No one comes out smelling like a daisy. You know, Anabaptists, you know, like, some of the good, like, staid Anabaptists, I mean, they would take up lynching groups and essentially scoop up all of the, you know, let's just call them Baptists for better recognition. They would scoop up all the Baptists and drown them. You know, it's like, oh, you like to be dunked? We'll dunk you.
Goodness. Okay, yeah. So did anyone happen to see the Richard Dawkins interview where he's like, you know, I guess Christianity isn't so bad. My words, not his, but that's the sentiment. Anyone see that? No one?
Yeah, he said he shocked people by saying that he's a cultural, kind of like Rabscuddle says, right? You know, like remember Rabscuddle?
Yeah, but after, like, railing on the Christian God for so long and, like, having a hand and, like, you know, really pulling a lot of people away and, like, you know, being a very firm hand in the lightning of Christianity in the West, he's like, wait, I didn't expect this. It's like, really? What'd you expect? Like, you know, peace and unicorns and everyone getting along, like, I don't know. But he's like, well... I'd rather be no religion, but if it's got to be something, like, I didn't expect a bunch of, like, Islamic invaders. And he, like, really stepped in it. So if he hasn't been called an Islamophobe yet, like, wait a few more hours, and that'll be the headline, because the woman interviewing is like, well, what do you mean? What do you mean? Like, he's like, well, if I have a Christian and a Muslim, you know, I'm going to pick Christians all day, because, you know, they're not as bad. She's like, what do you mean? He's like, well, you know, Christians have had their stuff with women in the past, but, you know, Islam kind of celebrates oppressing women. She's like, what do you mean by that? He's like, oh, well. It was so uncomfortable to watch him squirm. She's like, well, they're building 6,000 mosques in Europe right now. Like, is that bad? He's like, well, I'd rather it be Christian, but I like Christmas music. I'm like, oh, man, that was uncomfortable. It's like, yeah, maybe he should have just been like, well, I don't believe, but you can believe, and I'm not going to try to, like, you know, destroy your Christianity in the West because, you know, now you've got this.
Yep.
Care for what you wish for, you just might get it.
Yep. Yeah.
These hey, Rick.
Don't get it, do they?
What's up, Random? How you doing? Oh, go ahead, Chris.
Oh, just gonna, you know, like, just mocking Richard Dawkins. You know, we gotta get rid of Christianity, and then Islam fills the vacuum, and then he's like, oops.
It's like, what? The thing I've been trying to do for the last 30 years, I've realized I made a huge mistake.
Hey, Random. How's your morning going?
It is going well. It is like the first day of my, like, several-day vacation, so I'm doing great.
All right. What have you got planned?
Not much, which is why it's going to be great.
Staycation?
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, I was going to say, it's interesting because that other... somewhat recently, that other apparently prominent atheist lady supposedly converted, air quoting here, converted to Christianity.
Which one?
I wish I could remember the name.
Where was she from?
I'll find it in a second. But anyway, when you actually look at like her interview, like the transcript of the interview, and maybe some of the, basically her language, what the words she used, none of it, to me at least, sounded like she was saying, "Oh man, I believe in Christianity now." It seemed to be completely focused on like an anti-Islam kind of like, well, Islam is expanding because she used to be Muslim. She was born in a Muslim country. And so she was basically talking about how Islam is expanding. And for me, when I was reading it, it sounded like she was really concerned about the expansion and was saying, yeah, was essentially taking the position, I'm going to be a Christian now, not because I believe it, but because she thinks that Christianity is the only thing that can stop Islam expansion.
Oh, kind of like a Jordan Peterson. I mean, he didn't do it for Islam, but like his thing, how it's like, he's like kind of sort of brushing elbows with Christian, but because of some God idea, not necessarily the Jesus stuff.
Right. Yeah.
And no, Yvette, you're thinking of Kat Von D. Like she was, I think she was like a witch or something. But no, she's a Christian and,
yeah, and there's definitely some porn star that just became a Christian as well that was on Twitter, and then people were criticizing her, and she looks like she had a genuine conversion.
Oh, yeah, because she said she can... I remember this. Someone told me that story. Yeah, because they were giving her crap because they were saying she converted, but then she still had like her OnlyFans account up with like previous videos, so she's like, I'm not making more videos, but she was still making money from previous videos, but I don't know, maybe she just didn't take it down yet. I don't know, that I remember that was the pushback.
No, so what happened was that she turned off access to all of the content, but she had to leave it active because it was right in the middle of tax season, so she had to get the tax documents from the company. And if she had closed the account, it would have been much more difficult for her to get the tax documents. So all she did was make everything, I guess, invisible so that you couldn't get to it instead of closing the account. And then as soon as she got her tax documents, she closed the account. And it took a week to close the account, and the account is closed and gone permanently and all the content deleted. So, like, the people that were criticizing her looked extremely stupid afterwards. Because she did exactly what she said she was going to do. And, you know, yeah.
I posted the name in the chat. It's Ayan Hirsi Ali, I think.
Random, when are you going to shut down your OnlyFans account and come to Christianity?
Yeah, right.
I make too much money off of it, guys. I'm sorry.
Ayan Hirsi Ali is actually pretty famous.
And it's not that she has converted to Christianity because she was anti-Muslim. She was telling her story for a decade before converting to Christianity. So, like, she famously was, you know, warning the West about Muslims and about the Islamic influence, and telling her story for about a decade before she converted to Christianity. Now, I don't know truly converted to Christianity. I mean, I have no idea. I think she may have become Catholic. I'm not sure.
I mean, again,
Now a Christian, atheism can't equip us for civilizational war. Yeah, anyway, go ahead, Random. I was just reading.
No, it's not that I'm like opposed to her converting to Christianity. It doesn't change anything for me in the least. It's just kind of my reflection or my perspective on like reading the amount that I have read on her conversion. She doesn't seem to be expressing faith in Christianity, like, at all.
Oh, that may be the case. That may very well be the case. I know that, like, she's been a critic of radical Islam for the better part of a decade because she is in a lot of conservative circles and speaking in a lot of places like that for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I remember she got chased off of a college campus by a bunch of crazies here in America, and it was kind of shocking.
Crazies be crazy.
Ooh, I have one more frosted honey bun. This is like the worst thing I'm doing today, eating one of these things. Do you guys know what those are? No? No one?
I mean, what now? Say that again?
A frosted honey bun.
I don't know what that is.
Let me take a picture of it for you.
Oh, there you go. Throw it on the PTR.
I mean, it's like the most unholy thing I could probably be doing to, like, desecrate my body right now. But they're so good. But it's the last one. I got to resolve not to buy more.
I mean, that's probably not even in the top 10 things that you could do to desecrate your body right now. So
wait till you see it. It's pretty bad.
Okay.
Isn't a honey bun normally, like, glazed?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're going to see it in all of its glazed glory. Yeah, it's... Oh, they're so good. But I mean, it's probably like worse than a Twinkie or better than a Twinkie for survivability. Like I could in Florida, hot sunny Florida, I could probably go put this thing in my driveway and the next morning it would be untouched, like unfazed by weather. No bugs would be on it. No rats would have eaten it. Like, they're like, what is this? I'm not eating that. Okay. There, refresh PTR. That thing.
So it's just like something in between, or something phenomenally surrounded by sugar?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, it's like a powdered sugar turned into like a liquefied, hardened form of like a glaze, so it's like frosted. So it's basically like a bread, like a honey kind of flavored, almost like a cinnamon roll without the cinnamon. But then it's just trounced in like this like sugar frosted coating. They're so good.
Oh, did you see the story that McDonald's is going to start having
Going to have what?
They're going to start selling Krispy Kreme donuts.
Oh, really?
At McDonald's.
I mean, Krispy Kreme, it's kind of good for like a novelty item to be like, oh, wow, that's cool. It melts in your mouth. Like, that's interesting. That's weird. But after I have one, I'm like, I'm good for like a year. Like,
yeah, I mean, there's just like, you know, hey, here's 8,000 grams of sugar.
I used to live down the road. My neighbor, a few hills down, he worked for Krispy Kreme. He was like one of their, what was he? He was something like upper management for Krispy Kreme.
Oh, yeah. One of my friends was an area manager for Krispy Kreme for a long time.
Well, Walmart has Krispy Kreme, right? Like, I guess I get them, like, shipped in or whatever, but, I mean, they're still, like, Krispy Kreme donuts.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering for the countdown for like people building the Krispy Kreme burgers. Have you seen these things?
Oh gosh, yes.
Where they take. Yeah, it's so horrible. I was like, who's eating this? Like, this looks terrible.
Or I think like Dunkin' Donuts did their version. It was like a breakfast sausage patty or whatever, but it was on a donut. It was like their Egg McMuffin version, but instead of like buns, it was like donuts were on the side. I'm like, that's disgusting. If you want a donut, eat a donut. If you want a sausage sandwich, eat a sausage sandwich. Don't combine them. Some things should not be.
I mean, the McGriddle is like a kind of firmer pancake part of a like sausage egg thing.
Yeah, my kid loves those things, man. When he was like 5, he'd be like, McGriddle! Like it was like crack. Crack! Crack, crack! McGriddle! McGriddle, Daddy! McGriddle!
All right, so I don't know. Any other sacred texts you've been poring over that you'd like to impart to us?
I've been reading that Josh Pillows book. It's going to really piss off Michael, but yeah.
And yeah, everyone else, Chris, and everyone else.
I mean, it's just philosophy. I mean, I'm just trying to catch up on philosophy. You know, I've been reading some Kant as well.
And, I love Kant.
Also been, yeah, right. So I'm reading Critique of Pure Reason. So it's difficult reading, but it's good. You know, but Kant was trying to save philosophy and with the transcendental argument, just you know, failed because he's basing the transcendental argument on nothing that he can cash out epistemologically or metaphysically. So I know Nate's brain just went into lizard mode when I mentioned epistemology and metaphysics. So I'll just let him enjoy his honey bun and his lizard brain for about
it's
a
done. Minute. The honey bun did not last long. It's only right.
The honey bun did not last that long. All right. Well, you can
yeah, it's
go,
only
you
it's only right
to...
that you. Yeah, it's only right you give me something to counter the joy and happiness I had with this.
Yeah. Yeah. Just you know, I could just mention the word epistemology and it scares you like a. Like a ferret popping his head out of a den.
It's just such, just droning drivel. You just
Speaking
have to wait
philosophy.
So long for such little payout. Speaking of philosophy.
Speaking of philosophy, what do you got for us?
Serendipity, how do you know that?
I was just going to extend it to say I really like Kant's categorical imperative for ethics.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you and I can cash that out. Come over to the God War Room later, and we can chat about it.
The what?
So all the Calvinists have a room called the God War Room. So
sounds peaceful, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, no, it's not peaceful.
Sounds welcoming.
Oh my gosh!
No, and what's the other today. One? And the anti-Calvinist ones, like the "You Got Cut" or something like that.
What better way for me to spend my vacation? I'm in. Let's do this.
Yeah, right. You want to go argue with Matt Yester about epistemology, man?
100%. Yes.
Is Yester on the Precept kick too?
Yeah, Yester's been a Precept for like 10 years.
Oh, but I mean, does he like lead with that, or does he have like a conversation?
No, he can have a conversation. It's just like, okay. So like, here's the thing that I've noticed, right? The people who have been doing conversations for a really long time, outside of yourself, you're a unicorn in this space. But the people who have been doing conversations with atheists and heretics and
you're a unicorn, beautiful purple fur. And a rainbow, Nate. Let's go to Candy Mountain, Nate.
What I have noticed is people who have been doing this, like talking to people online for a really long time, tend to have very short tempers because they've heard it all before. And then unless you're going to say something interesting or new, instead of just regurgitating some like, you know, ihategod.com or atheist talking point, then they tend to have a pretty short temper. And you can't really, it's just human nature. You can't really blame people. Like, apparently Darth Dawkins used to be a pleasant and lovely individual to talk to.
I don't believe that.
He got too salty. Yeah, apparently so. Like, people will tell me, like, man, 10 years ago, that guy was so nice. And I was like, oh,
wait, are you saying in 10 years from now, I'm going to be like that?
No, Darth is
no,
nice.
No, that's why you're a beautiful and furry unicorn with rainbow hair. A rainbow mane.
I mean,
I don't know.
If people are going to be, like, dishonest and uncharitable, it's like, yeah, he's going to, like, tell him to screw off. Like, I don't see a problem with that. He's nice to people who are respectful and polite. I don't see why people think he should put up with the abuse of scumbag atheists.
My personal experience is otherwise.
Yeah, but why should he put up with abuse from people and then just take it with a smile and be nice?
Himself. I was just using that as an example. Like, I mean, I like Darth, don't get me wrong. He doesn't like me because I went into a room with Tom Rabbit one day or something. I don't know. But anyway, so long story short, Matt can have a really amazingly good conversation. It's just that he tends to get short with people because he's kind of lost.
Oh, it's when people are rude. If people are polite, respectful, there's no issues.
Well, I mean, another way of saying that is agree with me and never challenge me and we'll be friends. So, I mean,
no,
exactly.
That is exactly correct.
It is not. No, people challenge him. I've even seen people like insult him and he's fine with it. It's just the sleazy tactics, the lying, the dishonesty. That's what he just doesn't want to put up with it anymore. And I don't see why he should have to. Like, if you're not going to be an honest interlocutor, then, you know, get off the stage. Like, he's not, like, why should he be forced to talk to people that are, like, gaslighting and abusive? And if you know, he's tired of being abused and he's, like, short with people who are abusive, like, that's his right. Like, I don't know.
Or he's just short with people don't agree with him.
It's not about agreeing. Well, agree with them.
I mean, that's
it is not.
You guys are talking about two different people, I think.
Who's she talking about?
Talking about Darth?
No, I'm not talking about Darth.
She's talking about Matt Yester. I was just going to say, I think you guys are talking about two completely different people. So, like, let me nip this
in
the bud right now. So,
well, it's basically the personality types, right? Like, one, like, person A, if you like, you know, do what E-Bike says, they're going to get salty and sure, whatever. Person type B, if you're just like, well, I think you're wrong and here's why, this is what I think. They're like, no, you're wrong. It's like, well, you know. So if you're polite and meek and whatever, and you just disagree enough, personality B can, you know, freak out on that. And I would say that's wrong. Like, you should just agree to disagree. Whoever that applies to. What's up, Daniel?
Hey, what's going on? I got a quick question if you want to.
Sure. I mean,
anyway,
you know,
I was having
not here, so, yeah, go ahead.
I was having a discussion with a few Muslims last night, and they brought up, Matthew 15:24, and in it, it says that, well, what they're trying to say is that Jesus only came for the Jews. So see if I can pull the passage up. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I have it. He answered them saying, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel.
Correct. And then, okay, so my rebuttal to that was, look, he insults this woman apparently and refers to her as a dog. She's a non-Jew. And my response to them was to say that, well, at the end, if he's sent here only for Jews, then why is it that he responded to her request? The Canaanite woman requested that her daughter be healed, and the reason that he did that was because of her faith. So it seems to me like a really mixed message I'm getting when I read this. So what do you think of this idea?
I love this question.
All right.
Well, cool. Yeah. So The short answer is, like with most things, just keep reading. So I'll explain in a second, but the short answer is just keep reading. Because if you keep reading, you see the Great Commission, like, is it further down in Matthew, he says, look, you know, go to everyone of every tribe in the whole world, baptizing in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, and he'll be with you always, things like that. So if you keep reading, Jesus clearly sends his disciples and tells them to go to everyone, all people in the whole world. And then the reason you get that is the context is he was sent first, and you get this also by reading everything. I'm just giving you the rundown, so the way to fact check me would be reading from, like, just the whole book of Matthew. But so the synopsis is, yes, when he gets to that part, he says, I was sent to the lost sheep of Israel. And then this woman, he says, and, you know, I would push back on he wasn't calling her a dog. He said, even dogs, you know, get scraps in their master's table. So whether he was saying she's equal to a dog or not, I think it's inconsequential. It doesn't matter. The point is salvation. But I would say he's not calling her a dog. He's going further than that and saying, look, even the dogs, like even things worse than this person, whatever he thinks about her, is not a Jew. She's a Gentile. But let's go further than that and saying even dogs get to eat their scraps from the master's table. So I would say, but also if you're talking to the group you were saying, I think they have bigger issues with women's rights. But yeah, so I don't think he was calling her a dog. I think he was going above and beyond that and saying, look, even this thing that's so much further down the line than a Gentile, they get scraps from their master's table. But yeah, so he says, I was sent first to the lost sheep of Israel. And then he says, look, I'm the cornerstone that the builders are going to reject. Like, that's in the Bible. So Jesus is this thing that his own people didn't recognize and his own people rejected him. And then the Bible tells us that because of this, God is basically going to make them jealous by opening it up to the Gentiles. So, you know, they were the line through which Jesus came. The Messiah came through the Jewish people. That's why they're called the chosen people. Not that they get special favors, just Jesus, the line of the Messiah, came through them. So they were supposed to recognize him and be like, wow, Jesus is the Messiah. Yay. And then everyone would get saved anyways. But because some of these people had a problem and didn't recognize him as the Messiah, he's like, yeah, well, watch this. It's going to make you guys jealous by going to the Gentiles. And then they saw that and they got jealous. So that was the point. It's not like Jesus was never supposed to go to the Gentiles, but there was an order to do things. Like, God's not a God of confusion, but a God of order. So the order is Jesus comes through the line of the Jewish people, through the Israelites. He's the Messiah, a Jew, and all the Jewish people get the first opportunity. They get the first right of refusal, which some of them take. Others are like, hey, he's the Messiah. Like, the first followers who believed in him were all Jewish. But then others are like, nope, he's not. We reject him. And then it's like, okay, the next order is now let's go to everyone. So that's the expounded answer. But you can find all of that by just, you know, reading the Bible. Does that help, Daniel?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'll give it a closer read. But I will say that thus far, it's been very difficult. I've only had maybe one edifying discussion with Muslims on this app, and it's almost like I just want to just not even do it, not even have discussions with Muslims. And I know that that's like painting with a broad brush, but I feel like there's just obvious like dishonesty with it. So I don't know. I don't want to poison the well. That's been my experience. But yeah, thanks for that. I'll keep that in mind.
I hear your concern. Anyone else want to say anything about that?
I don't talk to Muslims.
Anyone else?
Sorry, Chris.
They're incredibly difficult to talk to. I mean, unless you get there's certain people that are genuinely wanting to have a conversation, but most of the Muslims you're going to find online are just going to be really obnoxious.
Well, it's kind of like what we were talking about earlier with e-bike, and, you know, this goes all ways. So it's kind of like, you know, people who say they're Muslims over the years, they'll come in and they'll act all very nice and friendly, because why wouldn't they be? They're trying to win you over. But then they try to hit you with some stuff that I guess they think the Christian or maybe the atheist hadn't heard. I mean, you know, I guess they have different apologetics or whatever for either crowd, but for Christians, you know, it's like they try to hit you some stuff with some stuff from the Bible, like what you just mentioned, Daniel, and It's like if Christians, you know their Bible, or they're like, no, that's not the case. So no matter how peaceful and calm you are, after all their stuff fails, they get more and more kind of forceful. And by they, I mean the one I've interacted with. They get more and more forceful until they're just, you know, yelling and screaming and challenging Chris to meet them on a field of battle. So it doesn't matter how nice you are. But on the other hand, there have been some other...
you wasn't just me.
Oh, yeah, it was me too. It was both of us. We're like, all right, well, we're not going to do that. Like, I guess if you find us, then, you know, be careful what you wish for. I mean, we're in Florida, yeehaw. But, you know, we're not going to try to meet anyone on a field of battle. Like, we've got things that fly for that. But no, I did meet, probably a couple, like, very moderate Muslims over my time doing this. And I think one was a guy in Saudi Arabia, and I mean, you could just tell, like, his demeanor. He's just a very easygoing guy. But, yeah, so, my experience has been less are like that and more like the other way.
Hey, you know what I just noticed, Nate?
What?
Because I can see an apparition of the Virgin Mary in your honey bun.
Great, now you're going to be Catholic.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, I can see the Virgin Mary in your honey bun PTR. You should just keep that up and see if Catholics will start worshiping it.
Oh my gosh, you know what? You should get, like, you do Photoshop, right? Or you're a photo guy. You should take, like, an image, like, the most stenographed or outline, like very vague image of Mary, and then, like, reduce it where it's barely visible, and then insert it in, like, just the right place in this honey bun, like, where a curve is or a shading is. So, and then, like, bury it. So it's like, don't you see Mary in there? So it's like just almost like one of those things where it's a dotted screen, but if you stare at it long enough, you see, like, a ship floating in it. Something like that, where if you stare long enough, you're like, oh my gosh, is that Mary in your honey bun?
I'm just saying.
And then after that, you can work on a third Shroud of Turin.
Oh my gosh, the Shroud of Turin. Don't get me started.
The Shroud of Turin doesn't convince you?
The resurrection of Christ convinces me.
The Shroud of Turin is a 14th century forgery. It has pretty much been proven as such.
But I'm sure there is something Jesus was covered with that is somewhere. So, you know, maybe he's eaten by the earth, maybe he's taken to heaven. Don't know, don't care, but I mean, I'm sure there was something that he was covered with at some point. But the thing Chris is talking about, yeah, not it. Hey, Elvin, what's up?
Good morning, good morning. I'm just here to chill.
All right, well, feel free to jump in if you have anything to say.
All right, cool.
I forgot what I was going to say. What was I going to say, Chris? Random.
You seemed really excited to change the subject there, Chris.
You're going to say that atheists have a shroud, too. Their whole worldview is shrouded in ultimate mystery.
It's shrouded in Romans 1. What, Random?
I was saying that you seem very interested in changing the subject.
Who, Chris?
From
no, you, when you were, like, calling on Alvin.
Oh. No, I was just trying to get to the new guy. I thought maybe he had a question.
That's fair.
I mean, there's only so much we can talk about the Shroud of Turin on. Like, I'm pretty much done. I don't really have anything to say about it. What, Alvin?
Wait, why doesn't Chris have mods? Was he misbehaving today?
Oh, no, everyone's been misbehaving. I'm just trying to do it myself. Because, like some Christians can't get along with other Christians, and those Christians don't get along with themselves. So I'm like, all right, guys. And it has nothing to do with this room, really. But I'm like, all right, guys, since there's, like, holy wars raging all over Clubhouse, so I'm not showing favoritism or anything like that, even though I don't know why I should be concerned with that. Some of the nicest Christians, if I give mod, because of all the extra AAC stuff, when the wrong Christian comes in, it instantly, like, sets them in, like, a fit of rage. And I'm like, okay, guys, for the time being, I'm just gonna try to do this myself, even though it's more work for me. So thanks to all of you guys. But that's why. So I'm just not Chris didn't do anything. I mean, you know, Chris is Chris.
It was jokes, bro. It was just jokes. Just making the joke.
I'm sorry for Alvin's taking you seriously. Well, there you go. I do mod you too, Chris, sometimes, right? Like, if you want to keep the conversation going and I leave.
I mean, you know who would be... Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, I don't generally mod. I just generally don't mod abuse people. I mean, if somebody's really a turkey, then I'll just drop them in the audience. But other than that, I don't do that. Unlike some other moderators.
Case in point.
But, yeah, exactly. But, no, like, the latest thing is this YouTuber, Kevin Thompson, that came on. Have you heard anything about this, Nate?
Is that the guy you were talking about in the last couple days, the Open Theist guy, or is that some other guy?
Yeah, that dude.
All I know is what you've said. I don't know him, or, of course, I haven't listened to anything.
Well, it's funny, because what he tries to do is he tries to, like, introduce, like, a whole bunch of psychology, like, fan fiction into theology, and starts trying to, like, he has no degree in any of these subjects. So he starts trying to armchair analyze why Calvinists believe in Calvinism with psychology. I mean, it's quite hilarious.
What'd he say? I didn't hear that part. What'd he say?
It's basically, like, you know, this whole, like, attachment theory, and he starts dropping in, I don't know. I pay no attention to psychology, so I'm trying to remember. It's like the how people hold on to beliefs. It's like something, and then fear, and then I don't remember. AFAR or something like that.
I was doing my own fan fiction on Mary Maxers last night. You want to hear it? I was going to post it.
Oh, yeah.
So this is what I have. I suspect Mary Maxers. Yeah. May have been.
You have to explain who Mary Maxer is first.
Yeah, yeah. People that pay too much attention to Mary may have been, or may have, what the heck, may have a psychological complex categorized by an excessive admiration of women, potentially stemming from a deep-seated desire for maternal figures. This could be related to the Madonna whore complex, where men dichotomize women into pure saintly figures, or objects of desire, reflecting an unresolved tension between seeking nurturing and seeking sexual fulfillment. So I might post that on my ex later. I don't know. What do you think about
that?
That'd
be really fun. I think that's great. Yeah, if we're going to armchair analyze people, let's throw that in there. So Nate, do a search for on your Chat GPT for AFAR psychology. That'll give
you AFAR, like A space F-A-R. Oh,
no, not one word.
Do you use 3.5 or 4.0 Chat GPT?
I'm poor, so 3.5 is what I'm stuck with. If you got 4.0, I mean, I'm sure it'll give us the same answer for that.
Yeah, it's similar, very similar.
I guess it just has access to, like, the internet and, like, updated stuff. You don't have to go back to, like, 2021 or whatever it says.
It's multimodal, so, yeah, you can use, like, video and stuff like that, images.
All right, let's see here.
Did you know there's an episode of X-Men, the animated series, where Wolverine runs the problem of evil on Nightcrawler? And then Nightcrawler gives him a theodicy, and by the end of the episode, he converts Wolverine to Christianity.
I heard something about that.
Yeah.
Like, is that one of the things people read into, or is it, like, very blatant and obvious that that's what's happening? Or are people just...
I mean,
no, it's, like, blatant and obvious.
Yeah, they're arguing about faith, like, the whole episode. Oh. And then at the end of the episode, Rogue walks into the church, and Wolverine was praying in the church by himself and, like, reading... was it, I think, Isaiah 12, 1 through 12, I think. It makes me cry when I watch it.
Is this the new one, or is this, like, from the 90s?
It's from the 90s. And the new one, they probably wouldn't do that, because, like, everyone hates Christians now in Hollywood.
It would be like how you're going to save the world from Christianity with a bunch of, try to be nice. But ChatGPT doesn't know what a far psychology is. It's like, I think you've misspelled it. Like, so, yeah, it doesn't seem to know what you're talking about. So maybe it's a ruse. Maybe the guy just made it all up.
No, I probably got it wrong. It's an acronym. It stands for something. It's like attachment fear. Yeah. I don't know. I forgot.
Let's see if it's an acronym.
So I tell atheists, I'm like, you know, Wolverine's pretty cool and he's a Christian. Why don't you be a Christian? Wolverine's a Christian. It doesn't work, though.
It might. It's a guess. Now it's just guessing. It might stand for aging, fertility, and reproductive health. No, it has no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
That's funny. There used to be this one atheist that his thing was always like, I'm a student of the mind. I'm a student of the mind. Maybe that your guy, does he sound kind of like that? Except this particular student of the mind ended up like after years of being on the discussion. Oh, Lou, you probably know him on Google. This particular atheist student of the mind ended up with another atheist chick who I guess left her husband and family of four. And they were doing, like, no one had heard from him. My phone cut out. Okay, there we go. But no one had heard from him in months. And then they popped up doing like a live stream. And they were like in a, it looked like a sketchy motel, like on camera together. I guess they met each other in real life and started dating. And I mean, I'm not going to accuse them of being on meth, but I mean, if someone's like, what does someone on meth look like? You'd see a picture of that scenario. It was unfortunate.
We're just good moral atheists, Nate.
There are all right, happy thoughts, guys. Happy thoughts.
Methican Americans.
Well, I mean, I didn't see them cannibalize anyone, so, you know, that's good, right?
So that's good, yeah. I mean, Haiti and all. Sorry, Haiti, the country.
That's hilarious. Yeah, it was you that said that, right, yesterday? Like, wait, you're calling Haiti a cannibal? You're like, no, Haiti, the country. I'm like, that's hilarious. Ah, made me laugh. Ah, it's too bad we don't get to see all these people. They should really come back. I don't know. It doesn't seem like Clubhouse is as bad as it was. I mean, they can't be having fun in the echo chamber over there. Like, they can't be having that much fun. Or maybe they've just quit all together.
John Lee went over there and they have a whipping boy.
Oh, yeah, and John. Like, yeah, how... You would think he would have came back by now or something. But again,
I think John Lee is cosplaying. I think John Lee is the ultimate foil that he, you know, he enjoys his being abused by atheists a lot.
You think that's like his penance or whatever? Like he's doing like service to God by being abused by atheists?
He's doing service to himself.
I love being abused by atheists.
Do you think it earns you favor with God, or you just like it?
No, I just like it.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to provide that service today.
Oh, come on, random. I think between you and Daniel, you could probably give e-bike a pretty good whooping. Come on up, Daniel. E-bike really wants to be abused today. I'm sure you've got an angle. I'll give up my name for you. Oh, yeah. You can take on that moniker.
Daniel has abused me a lot.
That's taking a turn.
Yeah, he's just being nice right now. I don't know why.
All right. I don't know if I have anything else. You guys have anything else?
Yeah, I gotta go to a meeting in like 10 minutes.
I'm reading a book.
We'll end it then. Let's talk for 10 more minutes. What book are you reading?
It's called The Objective Proof of Christianity. It is amazing.
Same book I'm reading.
You're reading that too? Same book I'm
reading. Can anyone spoil it? What is the objective truth?
It's a presuppositional apologetic. So it deals with like autonomous human reasoning versus like God's mind as the authority of reason, and it says like any philosophy that starts with autonomous human reasoning, it reduces to subjectivism, and then that reduces to skepticism. So like there's no way to link. We have like a conceptual scheme in our mind, and then you have to link the conceptual scheme in your mind to the real world to know, like so you could actually like know things. Because if you can't link our thoughts to the real world, then we're in a subjective experience. Like we can't actually know what's going on and objectively. And so this is like a big problem. This is what David Hume introduced, and it's a skeptical scenario, and no one's been able to answer it. But like God provides a great answer. He gets us out of the skeptical scenario. And so when you deny God, like you couldn't even have, the book says you can't even have any evidence. There's like, it goes over like the types of proof, like rational proof, empirical proof, pragmatic proof. And all these proofs reduce to subjectivism, which reduces to skepticism. So if they deny God, they couldn't even have evidence for anything. It's like, it's crazy. But it's actually like, I don't know, it's a sound, valid argument. So it's pretty devastating to the atheists. It's a good book.
Brandon, do you feel devastated?
I'm skeptical on the sound aspect, but I assume it could be valid.
Well, it's obviously valid. It's just X. X is a necessary condition for Y. Y, therefore X. That would be the form. And then I could give you an argument for premise one with like a disjunctive syllogism where I say like it's either autonomous human reasoning or the authority of the mind of God. And then I say two, autonomous human reasoning is impossible because any philosophy of autonomous human reasoning reduces to like skepticism. So then therefore the only way we could reason is through like the authority of the mind of God. Otherwise reason would be impossible.
Good.
I guess my first thought is like, how is that not just a false dichotomy? The first part.
Well, you'd have to come up with a third option.
Good morning, Michael.
Yeah, no, Random doesn't have to come up with a third option. E-Bike is saying that the contrary is impossible. So then the burden lies on him to demonstrate the impossibility of the contrary. Not to say, well, come up with something else.
Whose man's is this?
You are shifting the burden of proof. It's not going to work. You say it's impossible, show it. Show it's impossible.
Oh, yeah. But wait, wouldn't it be, I mean, if it's not a true dichotomy, wouldn't it be fairly easy, even if someone's like, okay, let me bear your burden and do your work for you? I mean, if it's not a true dichotomy, well, wouldn't it be fairly easy to come up with a third option that's, you know, passes muster?
Yeah, no, but this is the BS of the position. Like, this is the BS of the entire position, right? Because all I have to do is say, right? And this is something we chatted about before, right? I got this off of the Revealed Apologetics website. They have a slideshow up there that talks about, you know, it says that I start with God and the truth of the Bible, and I reason from there, not to there. Okay, so I switch that. I start with God is not true and the Bible is false, and I reason from there, not to there. How do you like your argumentation now?
Oh, it doesn't work if you're using...
No, it doesn't work because it doesn't fit your narrative. You are trying to do is you are trying to shift the burden. You are making a claim. You said the contrary is impossible. Demonstrate that.
Hang on. Well, Michael, you're coming in a little heavy. I guess it's the subject matter. But, Michael, I think that is a flawed, just on paper, even if you don't believe it, because they would have some claim of backing, right? Like God. Even if you don't believe it, on paper, that's the claim. So in order to do what you're trying to do, you would have to have a counterclaim being a God. Be like, no, there totally is a God, and that's why my worldview is grounded, but your God is false, my God is real. And so it would be apples to apples, and then you would just fight over that. But you can't say, yeah, go ahead.
It has to do with autonomous human reasoning, and we can demonstrate this, because this is what like David Hume proved, that any philosophy with autonomous human reasoning reduces to subjectivism, which reduces to skepticism. So your argument doesn't work since it uses autonomous human reasoning, and that is the crux of the issue.
Well, that's what I was saying. That's why what Michael said wouldn't work, because it's autonomous human reasoning. But like if a Muslim used the same reasoning, then they would say, well, it's not autonomous because we have a God and ours is real.
Right.
Ours isn't.
So we would use a different argument versus a Muslim. But the argument is actually best versus atheism, because transcendental arguments were designed to defeat skepticism by Kant. So
yeah, but they don't. That's the problem. So if you say something transcendental, okay, a transcendental is just a synonym for supernatural. Okay.
No,
so
it's
that,
not.
So that begs the question. And it's also not. When you make the statement that you're either starting with God, or that the reason this doesn't work is because they don't have an ultimate standard to appeal to, you are begging the question. Your arguments are so fallacious. The fallacies trip over one another.
Michael, calm down, bud.
This is no fallacy.
Is this like the worst topic someone could bring up to you to get your Canadian up?
Presuppositional apologetics is bankrupt. It's bankrupt.
But you don't have a valid criticism.
I
mean, you don't have a valid criticism, though. You're just like saying things. Like, what is your problem with the argument?
You're appealing to it. Yeah, the problem is you're appealing. So you appeal to God, right? You're appealing to God. You say you start with God. Yes.
What does that even mean?
You are appealing to an undemonstrated standard. You're saying our standard is God. Our standard is this unchanging thing. You don't have an account for anything, but we have an account for it. Your account is an undemonstrated standard. This stuff is bankrupt. If you could demonstrate your God, we wouldn't be having this conversation. But you can't. You take it on faith, and you have to. Hebrews 11:6 says, without faith, it's impossible to please God. You have to have faith. It's in your rule book. Accept it as faith.
Hang on, Michael. Why are you so mad about a God that doesn't exist? This makes no sense. Wait, Michael, you just said something there that kind of makes your point. So even if they say they don't need to, I don't think they're saying that, but even if your perception of them is saying they don't need faith because they can prove it and demonstrate it, well, what you just said would still work, because if they say they start with God and, you know, no one can pull God out of the sky, it's just their claim, right? So if there is a God and their claim is there is a God, then all the boxes are ticked and it makes sense. But you would say, even Michael, you would still have to have faith, because even though they start with God, they can't grab God out of the sky and put him in front of you. So they still take it on faith to some degree that would satisfy your Hebrews 11 response, right? Even if they don't admit it, that's still what they're doing, because no one can prove God, like pull him out here and put them in your face, right? So if their argument is basically it's a if this, then that. So if God is true, then this argument checks out. You just can't verify God to someone else. And you're I got a lot of feedback, Michael.
Oh, sorry.
Did you just get in a car or something, or?
Oh, no, I've been driving over a rough, just a rough patch of pavement, I guess. The problem is, you can do that whole, you know, IFTTT thing. The problem is the if that you're starting with. Well, okay. So again, if you flip it around and say, well, if God doesn't exist, then blah 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 blah. You can say all those same things with the reverse argument. It gets you nowhere. And the problem is the other thing you talk about, which is completely bonkers, is this autonomous human reasoning. I am sorry. but I've had this discussion with many people before. You can say that you start with this thing, but you don't. Because the only way, only always and ever, the only way you interpret the world is through your senses. So you have to start with the reliability of your senses. So this whole thing, I was reading this.
If you knew any philosophy at all, you would realize how stupid what you just said is. You just need to stop and just be quiet and read some philosophy. I'm going to tell you to read a book because you're sounding incredibly and deliberately ignorant right now.
Okay, Chris. Chris, how do you interpret the world? How do you interpret the world?
The only way you
see is through your eyes, smell, taste, touch. I'm sorry. Even this whole bonkers notion of a quote unquote revelatory epistemology, you still rely on your senses to receive that revelation. And if you don't agree with that, I don't know what you're talking about, but more than that, you don't know what you're talking about.
But that's a non-issue, Michael, because no one is disagreeing with that. No one would disagree with that. Like, that's a non-issue. It doesn't matter.
Great. So you start with your senses. So don't say you start with God.
But here's the question, though. Wait. Chris, let me. What are the necessary preconditions to have an intelligible experience? That's the question we ask as a presuppositionalist.
That's fine. And so if I say something like consciousness, you would respond with, then you're going to respond with something. But what you start with, so then you start with, I've heard this before. I've heard guys, when Matt Slick was on our podcast, he was talking about this. And I've heard him puppet it many times. God is the necessary precondition for intelligibility. I'm sorry. Yes. That begs the question that the God exists in the first place.
No, it doesn't.
And if you see that, you are blind.
No,
you are blind to the fallacy you're committing.
If I have a book and I go, well, an author is a necessary precondition for a book, am I begging the question?
No, because books are real things.
So it's not begging the question. It's the same form.
Can you demonstrate books exist?
Yes.
Can you demonstrate maps exist, cars, these other things?
Yes.
I've heard this before. It's a version of the watchmaker argument.
Yeah, does intelligible
exist? Yes, we can demonstrate reality exists.
That's the point. We can demonstrate.
Right, demonstrate to me that love exists.
We take a fact that we all agree.
We can demonstrate hate exists right now.
We all agree intelligible experience exists, and so we take that fact, and then we just go, well, what is necessary for this fact to be true?
Yeah, your undemonstrated standard.
What?
Your undemonstrated standard. You're saying God is necessary for that, which begs the question that it exists in the first place.
It does. It doesn't.
How does it not beg the question? How does God is the necessary precondition for intelligibility? How does that not beg the question that the deity exists in the first place?
Begging the question would be putting the conclusion in the premises.
Ding, ding, ding. If you're saying God exists, you are concluding that God exists in your premise. Ding, ding, ding.
Michael, can I?
Yeah, fire away, man. I gotta go silent for about 3 minutes.
And I got to go in about 5.
Yeah, but the premise doesn't have to do with God's existence. It's saying that it'd be necessary for God to exist if this thing exists. And then we go, well, we all agree that this thing exists, so therefore it follows from that God exists as well. It's simple.
Can I explore aside from when Mike jumped in, can I explore that first argument once more? What do you mean by autonomous human reason?
Like reasoning without reference to God.
Wait, so you're defining autonomous human reasoning in terms of God?
Yeah, autonomous meaning like authority, like human reasoning. The human mind is the authority of reason.
But the easiest way to think about it is we're saying you can reason without reference to God, or you can reason with reference to God. And if you try to reason without reference to God, your philosophy will collapse into subjectivism, which collapses into skepticism. So
hold on. When I said I want to explore this, sorry to interrupt, but like when I said I want to explore this, I'm going to need to take that step by step, kind of what you were just saying. So you're saying if we're saying that reason can emerge or exist separate from a specific reference to God, yeah. What's the next step there?
Why would there be another step? I don't know what you mean. That's it.
Well, you said that it descends into subjectivism, which descends that's what I'm talking about. I want to take that step by step.
Well, we'd have to go over the types of reasoning you can do. Like there's rationalism, right? And rationalism is going to say there's these self-evident truths. And then based upon these self-evident truths, they'll say induction is self-evident. The self is self-evident. Experience is self-evident. So they have all these self-evident foundations. And then from there, they reason. But the problem with that is what's self-evident to you might not be self-evident to me, because different rationalist philosophers come to completely different conclusions. So therefore, rationalism reduces to subjectivism, and subjectivism reduces to skepticism.
Okay, and so what's the problem with skepticism?
Well, you couldn't know anything. You're in a skeptical scenario, so you wouldn't even, you'd be like a solipsist. You wouldn't know there were other minds or the external world was real. You wouldn't be able to know any of this stuff if you're skeptic.
Well, I mean, I agree, kind of. So you wouldn't be able to say with complete and absolute certainy any given thing.
No, metaphysical certainty. Metaphysical certainty is different from epistemic certainty. We're not saying epistemic certainty. We're saying metaphysical certainty.
Well, what is metaphysical certainty then?
For the possibility of knowledge to even exist. For reason to even exist. It's a much deeper question than can you reason? It's deep. We're going second level logic here. We're doing meta logic.
I guess I'm just not seeing what you're pointing to here. You're saying that reason needs something in order to exist, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and so how do you point to something and say that is what is
the
foundation of the rationality or logic?
Because if we try to reason without God, and we fall into a skeptical scenario where you couldn't know anything is true, then we could say, well, because that's impossible, right? So due to the impossibility of the contrary, God has to exist.
So it's not anything significantly substantial. It sounds like it's rooted in, what is that?
I'd say it's very
argument. It sounds like it's an argument from ignorance. Because I can't come up with anything else, this must be it.
No, it's a reductio ad absurdum, at a foundational level. So if you're going to be absurd at a foundational level, that's devastating to your position. Because
but it sounds like you're just creating an answer and then saying, well, I can't come up with any other answer, so this must be right.
Yeah, we have models of reality through which we interpret the world. You don't just interpret the world without a model of reality. That's impossible. Your experience is filtered through your worldview.
Well, actually, that's a good point. How do you attain experience?
What?
That's my question. How do you attain experience? What is experience?
I don't know a good answer for the
definition. By existing.
Right, by existing. That's it. That's the only thing that I could think of. You have to exist first in order for you to even make claims that you are experiencing.
Okay. And then there are also things that need to be in place for you to exist. You can't just think
like what?
It's impossible to have believe one thing, because we have to believe things as a web. So the preconditions for like intelligible experience are like a web of beliefs. And like, what would unite and give a relationship to that web of beliefs?
If there's that, no, I exist, that any given one of us exists.
How do you prove that in your worldview?
Oh, I can't. I assume that in my worldview.
So you got no justification.
Right. Yeah, my ground is that I exist. So if it is the case that I don't exist, then everything falls apart. And if it is the case that I don't exist and everything falls apart, I don't really care anyway because I don't exist.
You have to give justification to your existence in your worldview.
I say my assumption of my existence, the reason why I assume that I exist, is because if I don't exist, then nothing matters. Like nothing that I, because I don't actually
and
experience.
What's wrong with that?
If I don't exist, I don't experience.
So what? What's wrong with nothing mattering? Nothing.
Nothing. Okay. I wouldn't say there's anything wrong with that.
So then why do you try to justify your existence? There's no need for that either.
Because it's through the exploration of my existence, my supposed existence, that I can interact with other things.
You wouldn't be able to justify your own existence. I mean, this is what philosophers have said, like in the 18th century. This is where Kant gets some of his critiques.
Well, this is also the hard like asking for a solution to hard solipsism, right?
That's why you must be Christian, because exactly, atheism or agnosticism does lead you into solipsism. You can't know anything. You can't know history. You can't know whether or not you exist. It's ridiculous.
Right, but we can. But I can root in an assumption of my existence.
That shows you can't justify it.
Right, I can't justify my existence because anything that I would use to justify my existence utilizes an aspect of my existence.
Yeah, and then in our worldview, we're able to justify our existence.
You claim that you are, but I don't see how it's any different.
No, we're able to justify our existence. You're unable to justify your existence in your worldview.
Well, okay, you're saying that, but if you're going to say we can justify our existence separate from the way that you're doing it, like the way that I'm doing it, how do you do that?
Well, we believe in a metaphysical entity, a deity. So I'm sure you've gone through the presuppositional apologetic before, but that's exactly how we do it.
But I'm failing to understand how you can get to an outside entity without you first existing.
So when we conduct the presuppositional method, what we do is we start with the uncreated creator, and that must be presumed before we're able to do any scientific method or even claim that we exist. That's why we start with the creator himself.
So you start from an assumption too.
That does not justify Christianity, but it does justify.
Wait. So you start from an assumption as well.
I know. We all do.
Okay. So again, I go back to
that was never the argument.
This is different.
The argument was justify your existence. That was the argument. Don't change.
Oh, so because you kick the can a little bit farther back and then just choose not to justify that part, yours is better.
Yeah, because
what justification does a metaphysical being need? I wouldn't say that he needs one.
It's because we're out
but
of
when we talk about go ahead. When we talk about our existence, I think we can prove that, and that's through theist worldview.
At a foundational level, like because of Gödel's incompleteness theorem, like we would have to use language to prove language. You'd have to use math to prove math. You have to use logic to prove logic. And so when we get to like foundational levels, then we have to like assume things. And God is God is one of those things that we have to assume to have an intelligible experience. And if you do not, if what we're saying is true and you do not presuppose God, then you wouldn't be able to speak.
For clarity, you are saying acknowledging you assume God exists, right?
he's a necessary assumption for an intelligible experience. Yeah.
That sounds like a fantastic dodge to a yes or no question.
No, but we're not in middle school where we just give yes or no questions. We're going to give a philosophical answer to philosophical questions.
Yeah, I can just say yes, yes, I do.
Right, right. I mean, just the essential part of it is, yeah, you assume the necessary precondition, which to you, the necessary precondition is God.
No, not to me. That's objectively to everyone.
Okay, cool. I see no reason to continue a conversation because your base, your root, is your assumption of God, the necessary condition, and mine is something else, a little bit farther down the line.
But you have yet to even justify your very own existence.
But so
I told you I wasn't going to. I said I assume it.
Your existence.
Okay, guys, with that, my time is up. I have to run, but well. Not going to say it was a fun conversation.
Thank you, Nate. But
thanks for being here, guys. I'll see you guys later.
Take it easy, bro.
Take care.